Good morning. It is March the 8th, 2026, in the year of our Lord, and the title for my message is If Only. If Only. The first reading comes from Exodus chapter 17, verses 1 through 7. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." And the Lord answered Moses, "Go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" My second reading comes from the Gospel of John, chapter 4, verses 1 through 26. Now Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that he was gaining and baptizing more people than John, although in fact it was not Jesus who baptized, but his disciples. So he left Judea and went back once more to Galilee. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. And when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. And Jesus answered, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I will give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and having to keep coming here to draw water." And he told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. And Jesus said to her, "You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you have had five husbands, and the man you have now is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true. Sir, I can see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem. Woman, believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming, and it has now come, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is Spirit, and his worshipers must worship in the Spirit and in truth." And the woman said, "I know that Messiah, called Christ, is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, am he." If only. How many times in our lives have we thought or said to ourselves, "If only. If only I could move out of Western New York and make a new start somewhere else. If only I could change careers or jobs and make more money. If only I could buy a new home in a better neighborhood. If only I had enough money to really retire and do what I want to do. If only I had a new love interest in my life. If only this or if only that. There was a song released in 1980 for the movie Urban Cowboy, which starred primarily John Travolta. And in that movie, there was a song sung by Johnny Lee. And one of the lines in that song was looking for love in all the wrong places. Well, maybe we could say instead, looking for happiness in all the wrong places. You know, there is something about us where we are always thinking or believing that the grass is greener somewhere else. Here's a humorous story. Will Rogers once commented that now and then he grew tired of living in the same surroundings. And when he had these feelings and these sentiments, he would wish for a new place to live and work. He would daydream. He said he would pick some city that sounded attractive to him at that moment. And before he moved, he was very wise. He would subscribe to the leading newspaper in that community or city. And he would read that newspaper for at least 30 days. And after reading that newspaper for 30 days, Will Rogers said that he always decided not to move. The news from where he planned to live was no better than the news where he was currently living. With that being said, I wonder if Will Rogers ever took the time to read the Gospels. The if-only questions of happiness will not produce contentment and peace by just moving to a new state, a new city, a new time zone. Neither will finding a new love or starting a new career. Sure, you'll have some excitement. Sure, you'll be thrilled with the changes in your life. But like all things, there's nothing new under the sun, and those emotions and those feelings will begin to dissipate and to recede into the background. Now, when we come back to the gospel, let's look at the Samaritan woman at the well. In her culture and her society, and it's probably true today in some well as well, she was a pariah. She was an outcast. She might have been the equivalent of an ancient Elizabeth Taylor. If you're not familiar with Elizabeth Taylor, she was an American actress, a very beautiful woman, and she was married 8 times. In the gospel, the Samaritan woman was married 5 times. And that's why I said she was the ancient equivalent of an Elizabeth Taylor. This woman in Samaria took the plunge 5 times. And maybe each time she thought to herself privately, this is the one. This is gonna last. And yet we read that that was not the case. When she has her interaction with Jesus, she is now living with a man. And she was doing then what so many people do today in Western culture and society. They choose to live together for whatever reason. Some of it's economic, some of it's security, some of it's having the knowledge that there's a roof over their head or that they will not be alone. I get it. I understand it. If only I could have more. Let me share this story about Claire Booth Luce. Claire Booth Luce was an American writer, a politician, a diplomat, and a conservative public intellectual. She had everything that many people desire. She had good looks, she had a family, she was successful personally and also in her public service. And in her public service, she was appointed as a U.S. ambassador to the country of Italy, the first woman to do so. When she was living in Italy, she lived in a historic, stately 17th century Italian villa. However, while she was living there, she became sick and she became weak. She deteriorated physically, where she was always tired, she was losing weight, and she had no energy, no gumption, no drive, no desire. Well, eventually she was tested by her doctors, and it was found out that she was being poisoned by arsenic. Her staff all had background checks, and it wasn't anyone from her staff that was poisoning. Through discovery, it was learned that in her bedroom, on the ceiling of this 17th century Italian villa, were painted ornate roses. And those roses were painted with arsenic in the paint. And over the course of time, a fine dust was falling from these roses on the ceiling and into the air where she was sleeping. She was breathing in and ingesting arsenic. Who could expect their idyllic home to actually be poisoning them? Let me summarize this illustration. Some of the most miserable and lonely places on earth are in the homes and estates of the rich and the famous. You know, tradition is something that gives human beings a sense of identity. It tells us who we are and where we came from. Tradition can also set us apart from other people. Sometimes that is beneficial and good, and sometimes it is not. Some people love to mingle and to be a part of an exclusive club that sets them apart from others. In the Western New York area of Buffalo, you have the Saturn Club, the Buffalo Club, you have Park Country Club. These are private country clubs where people join if they have resources and connections. Maybe the country club scene isn't your bag. Maybe you don't want to spend thousands of dollars just to become a member. Maybe you don't want to pay the annual fees that are due. Maybe you choose to be distinct from others by the automobile that you drive. Many Americans love their automobiles, and I'm one of them. Maybe you choose, if you have the financial wherewithal, to drive a Land Rover, or a Volvo, or an Audi, or a BMW, or a Porsche, or a Cadillac, or a Lincoln Continental, on and on and on I could go. That's how you want to be distinct from others. Now, with that being said, other people in our nation's history had this sense of superiority, and not based upon fact and reason, but really upon a condescension and ethnocentrism towards other peoples. So in the history of our country, and this would be true of other nations as well, you would have segregation of various kinds. No Jews allowed, no blacks allowed, no women allowed, no working class allowed. And believe it or not, it's changed so much so that today, no white men allowed. But human beings, most of us want to belong. We crave to be accepted and loved. That is how God made us. There is that social aspect and that component to our very psyche and nature. We want to belong. And there really is nothing wrong with that, depending on who you want to belong to. Now, I don't know how many listening to this message might remember an American CEO. I remember him as a teenager in the 1980s by the name of Lee Iacocca. Lee Iacocca worked for Ford, and then he transitioned over to Chrysler. And what I remember when Lee Iacocca was trying to save Chrysler from bankruptcy and irrelevancy, they had K cars, and I think they were crappy cars, but they were cheap. And I remember K cars being advertised in the 80s. Funny story, though, as it pertains to Lee Iacocca. When he was assigned to work in the south of the United States, he decided to change his first name, which was Lido, L-I-D-O, to Lee. And he did that in order to ingratiate himself with the Southerners. And he even commented that his first name resonated with the most famous Confederate general of all, General Robert E. Lee. And once he shared that story, and once that was made known, he was accepted by those Southerners. His plan worked. As I said a few moments ago, most of us want to belong. And there is usually nothing wrong with that, unless, of course, you despise and look down upon others out of your own pride, your own arrogance, and condescension. We call that ethnocentrism. You know, when you think about success, success can be relative in some respects and factual in others. Success for some is having the ability to accumulate, quote, stuff. Stuff that they accumulate during their careers, and that stuff can add up pretty quickly. You know, as human beings, we want to be concise. We want to point to tangible things we have accomplished in our lives. Maybe it's projects, as in project management. Maybe it's degrees that we've earned from colleges or universities. Maybe it's specific certifications to a specific industry or a discipline. Maybe when we're younger and we're athletic and we're involved in sports, we can be accomplished by feats of strength and endurance. For some people, it's exotic trips taken in their lives from different parts of the four corners of the world. For other people, success is having goals met, having a bucket list and checking it off as you live your life. For other people, success is purchasing expensive works of art and is displaying them in your home or in your office. Still for others, success is in your investments. Your investments growing and compounding interest, and your portfolio getting larger and larger. You're going from a person having meager resources to investing and saving, and then over time, because of the stock market and the boom and bust cycles, but under a boom, under a bull run, you can become a millionaire. Well, in today's world, a millionaire, I hate to say it, is nothing. Now it's a billionaire. And just recently, the world had its first ever trillionaire, that being Elon Musk. And still for other people, success could be retiring early, retiring professionally in your 40s or 50s, not working till 62 or 65 or 67 or 70 or whatever it is, because you have to. But I'd like us to expand our notion of success. How about success in your relationships as a human being, as a man or a woman? How about a success in your marriage when so many other marriages crumble and fall apart sadly? How about success in your relationship with your children or your grandchildren? How about success in your relationships with your brothers and your sisters, in other words, your siblings, knowing what's going on in their life and actually talking with them? Is that a sign of success? Maybe let's break it down to where you live. Maybe you don't have brothers or sisters or things like that. Maybe success is having some type of relationship with the physical neighbors you live with in your neighborhood. And possibly, the key word is possibly, forming a bond of some kind with them. You know, many people, and I know these are broad generalizations, but I believe these broad generalizations are true. That's why they're a generalization. Many people desire and crave peace and contentment in their life. And when you think about it, if you come to a saving knowledge and make a confession of faith to Christ, the people that share the most contentment and the most peace in their life are God's people, whoever you are. The peace that Jesus gives us is not, however, the absence of troubles, but rather the confidence and the knowledge that He is with you always. It's a peace that passes all understanding. It's a peace that you cannot buy with money ever. We find our true identity as being His children, as sons and daughters of the Most High. And with that knowledge comes a security that He will never leave us or fail us, and that we have a love that never grows old or cold from God, because God's love is not temporary. God's love is forever. St. Thomas Aquinas was a medieval Roman Catholic theologian and philosopher. He had a number of systematic theological works. He traveled, and he shares this story. And the gist of the story is that there is a man who found out about a very special ox. And because this ox stood out from other oxes, he was determined that he was going to find it and have it as his own. So in his search for this special ox, he traveled all over Europe. And in the course of his travels, he spent a fortune searching for this very special ox. And in his search, he gave many years of his life to find this special ox. And it's reported that before he died, this man who spent time and money looking for this very special ox realized that in his travels, he had been riding on that very special ox the entire time. If only. Look no farther than your own heart and soul. Open them both to the Lord, and he will give you living water, and you will never thirst again, just as he said to the Samaritan woman at the well.